What's happening, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee, just 99 cents. Any size, that's 99 good reasons to switch. Kyle Draper, A'Sherrod Blakely with you. We got a lot to get into. ESPN came out with their top 100. We're going to count that down, go through that. Some obvious mistakes they made in their rankings. I'll tell you about it in a minute.
Obvious mistakes?
Obvious. Dude, wait till I tell... I'm going to just tell you one. Can I tell you one before we get into the
The one that you that got you all bent out of shape, got your panties bunched up?
They got Kyrie at number 20.
Okay.
Ben Simmons at 18.
That's your boy. That's your boy. That was your. That was the Draper vote right there.
Dude, Ben Simmons. They got Oladipo ahead of Kyrie, Sherrod.
As long as they put some respect on the name of Marcus Smart and put him in a top 100, I don't care about the other 99. Show my boy some respect. Some respect on his name. Put him in that top 100. He's 55.
They got Nikola Jokic at 12.
Now, that's a little high for him, but
he's a good
baller.
Player. He's a baller.
He's
no doubt about that.
He's a definite top 20
No
player.
Doubt about that. So we're going to break down this top 100 coming up in a minute because clearly.
I can't believe Kyle said something negative about a Sixers player.
Look, I'm a Ben Simmons guy, but he shouldn't be ahead of Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie's a top 10 player in this league.
I think Kyrie is a guy that is on what I call that top 10 bubble. He should be no worse than 12 or 13. He could easily be up to me as high as 7 or 8. He's in that range, and that's a good range to be. I mean, if you're talking about a guy who's 26 years old, five-time All-Star, and you're right there, come on.
Come on, man.
But your boy Ben Simmons, you're right. He is too high.
Hey, we got Austin Ainge coming up here. I know you had a chance, Sherrod, to talk to him. Austin delivering the goods for us, the Celtics director of player personnel. He's jumping on with us coming up in a little bit. But first, let's begin. We'll get back to the top 100, but we got to talk about Jimmy Butler.
JV?
And I'm going to say my guy, Jimmy Butler, because I'm a big-time Jimmy Butler fan. Okay. I think Jimmy Butler gets it done both ends of the floor. Yeah. Clearly, it's not working out in Minnesota. Well, he wants out, reportedly. And I don't know, does he come off looking bad, though, trying to force his way out of Minnesota now?
Well, I think it depends on what you believe the reasoning for him wanting out of Minnesota is. When you look at that team, here's the thing about Jimmy Butler. Jimmy wants to be around guys whose effort isn't questioned. Guys who, when they step on the floor, regardless of how they play, good or bad, you're never going to question their effort. Wiggins, questionable effort, night in, night out. He's a good player.
Yep.
Karl Anthony Towns, great talent. Effort kind of
wanes. The motor. Yeah.
And so if you're Jimmy Butler and you're looking at the clock, you're like 30, 31 years old. You ain't got a lot of time to get these kids motivated. They should be motivated by the fact that they got a chance to be great players. And Jimmy is bothered by that. And Tibbs, who is, to me, is the perfect coach to get guys motivated, has not been able to get it done. And I know he hasn't been there a long time, and he could obviously get it going down the road. But Jimmy Butler's not trying to hear that.
Yeah.
And I can't blame Jimmy Butler for doing what players, I think, should do more often, and that is take control of your career as much as you can and control the narrative by which your career is defined.
Yeah, Jimmy had no problem with that.
Because, and the one thing about Jimmy Butler, too, that people, I think, have to understand is that wherever he goes, he makes you better. That's the one thing that is unquestioned. But there's a point where I can only make you so much better if you don't give forth effort. Right. And then you got Wiggins, cousin or brother, trying to pop a noise.
And then you get
Steven Jackson involved. See, this is my issue with that. Wiggins' family member starts cracking on Steven Jackson, talking about basically Steven's not a good player, not highlights. The dude got a ring.
He got a ring.
And if you go back and look at that San Antonio team, he was a big reason for them getting that ring.
But this is the problem with some of these young cats.
Steven Jackson is not the dude that you want to go to.
Yeah.
Whether it's social media
or in the street.
Because he will crack you.
But Wiggins has 150 million reasons or whatever to put the middle finger up. Yep. Minnesota gave him all that money. He thinks he's doing everything right. He thinks he's good.
And that's the problem. When you are a good player, you need to be wanting to be a great player.
Right.
Wiggins is a good player. I question, and I certainly think Jimmy Butler questions, whether he wants to be a great player. Because great players, they're going to embrace. They're going to try to reach out and try to get Jimmy to stay. Because Jimmy makes him a better player. Jimmy makes them a better team. Yeah. Without Jimmy, you don't get to the playoffs. With Jimmy, you get to the playoffs. And when he was hurt, your numbers were better, But your team wasn't.
Yeah, you weren't getting the wins.
So clearly he is a big part of what they were doing in terms of winning. And if I'm a young guy, I would hope that I'm mature enough and understand that I need him much more than he needs me. Because there will be – and the problem for Minnesota now is that whatever deal you strike, you are going to get shafted. Right. You are going to get shafted. You know it. The other team knows it. It's just a matter of how many assets are the Clippers are willing to part with.
Or can they pull a Kawhi Leonard kind of trade? Because San Antonio got some quality in return. You know, that's probably the best you can hope you can get out of that kind of a deal. So if you're, you know, if you're Minnesota, you know Jimmy Butler has these three teams. But you don't pay attention to that.
No.
You don't let that dictate where you send him.
I mean,
you look out for yourself.
Inside, you kind of chuckle when you see those lists because you're thinking, that's where you want to go. But look, where you want to go and where the best deal lies aren't necessarily one and the same, and that's going to be their thing. So I still think at the end of the day, if he is going to be with another team, it's going to be the Clippers. One, that's the team that when you talk to people throughout the league, that's the team that he prefers. And two, the reason why he prefers, he knows what he's dealing with a Doc Rivers-type coach.
Yeah.
And the Clippers have, I think, some pieces that if you're Minnesota and you're going to lose Jimmy Butler, you're going to want a Tobias Harris type player in return.
Nice for them.
And if you are the Clippers, you know, their guy, the guy they want is Kawhi Leonard. So if you can get Jimmy Butler
and then Kawhi,
and find a way to make the numbers work and make a run at Kawhi, that's what you want.
If you're the Celtics, do you even pick up the phone, call out there?
Well,
call Tibbs and them up.
I think the Celtics will do their due diligence like they always do. They're just going to see what's up. Just, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Let us know if y'all really want to do something. But I don't think they're going to be aggressive about it because they don't need to. As much as you love Jimmy Butler as a player, and Austin, he's going to talk about this later on as far as like the roster balance that you need as far as guys with max type contracts, guys on rookie deals. You look at the Celtics at that wing position. They got two guys, one who's a borderline all-star and a guy like Jason Tatum, and another one who is coming on the rise and Jason Tatum still on a rookie deals. Do you really want to give up those assets for a 32-ish max type player?
If it'll keep Kyrie happy. Ooh, hit
Here's
it with that, right? You wasn't ready for that comeback.
I was ready for that.
But supposedly they want to play together. If you're Danny Ainge and this guarantees Kyrie staying.
But that's just it. It won't guarantee he's staying.
I'm just throwing the question
that's
out
the
there.
That's the thing about it. I mean, Kyrie's going to keep us all guessing until he has to absolutely make a decision. And if I'm him, I'd do it the same way. I would not commit to anything until I absolutely had to. That is, to me, the smart play on his part. You sold all in with the Cavaliers. 2 days later, you're second in command. When you thought it was your shit.
Right.
That's true.
I understand from a Kyrie standpoint, but if I'm Danny Ainge, I want some answers, or at least I want to know just what you're thinking.
You're talking about Kyrie?
Kyrie. That's the
thing, right?
Or if you're Danny, you can't just go into the season with their eyes closed. You know, sunshine and rainbows, it's all going to work out. Kyrie's coming back, I'm sure. Dude, you don't want to be left stranded. If Kyrie bolts on you for nothing.
But this is where I hate to use this word, but it's true. The genius of Danny Ainge comes into play. I hate to use that word, but it's true. If I lose Kyrie, I got Terry Rozier. If Gordon Hayward goes down with an injury, I got Jaylen Brown and Jason
Tatum. That's true.
If Al Horford isn't able to go, you know what? I make Baines a much more significant part of what we do. It's not the same, but you could do a lot worse.
You saw that.
You could do a lot worse.
Right.
So they've structured their roster so that if they lose a critical, instrumental part of what they want to do, they've got somebody who can fill that void. And Terry Rozier, I mean, if we're being honest and keep it real, he got his opportunity to rock and roll, and he made it happen.
He still had some room for growth.
Absolutely. And he had a horrible game seven, and I get that. But to me, when you're talking about a young guy like that, to really lock in on one bad game, knowing that he had like 7, 8, 9, 10 really good games, it's just not right. So they've planned in case of emergency, and we can't keep our 26-year-old five-time All-Star, we got a nice young buck on the rise who would be cheaper. Even if we got to pay him big bucks, he'd still be cheaper than what we'd have to pay Kyrie.
Yeah, hold up.
What?
I'm looking at the list, man.
Oh, God. Who we got?
They got Markelle Fultz, 93.
Wow.
Markel ain't even play.
I know.
See, that's what this is what upsets me about these lists sometimes. Like, I feel like they put certain things in there just to stir debate. You know, they don't really believe Markel Fultz
is the 93rd
best player in the NBA.
In a perfect world, though, the number one pick in last year's draft
should be
higher,
there, right?
Really.
Should be maybe top 50. You know, but
he was on a partial redshirt program with the Sixers. He didn't get the full.
They say he cured the yips, though. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. Opening night.
I just
October
know when
16th.
The lights come on, it's a completely different game.
Because
empty gym ballers.
Right, right. People geeing you up.
You look great on Instagram. Right. But, you know, what can you do in the real game?
No. So we got Terry at 82, but yet Marcus at 55. You surprised by that?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Because Marcus's body of work is a little bit longer than Terry's. Terry had a great year last year and had a great postseason run. And he deserves to be, I think, highly regarded for that. Marcus has been a consistent elite defender for like 2-3 years. So he should be higher. And he has, I think, when you think about the way the Celtics have just kind of ascended in the Eastern Conference, I don't think it's a coincidence that Marcus Smart has been playing starter-like minutes coming off the bench, and he's been a big part
of
it.
And we saw around All-Star break when he was out, and then when he came back, you know, the way he took off. I don't know. I just find these lists to be so interesting. You know, Marcus not even on the SI list. Terry's on both at
same
82,
number,
right? You know, it's crazy.
It's almost like they look. It's almost like SI or ESPN looked at the SI list and they said, okay, 81, 82.
Right.
Yeah, 80, that's a good spot.
Dang, they got DeMarcus Cousins 69. I understand the injury and everything, but dang, dude. All right, so I'm going down this list here. Who else we got? Al Horford, 32
or something like
32.
That.
32.
Yeah.
You cool with that?
Yeah, I am. All right. All right. I am. I have no issues with that.
All right,
To me, Al is like, I think peak for him, in my opinion, is 25. I think he's like a borderline top 25 player. No worse than 35. He should be in that range because of all that he does in terms of winning and really what he stands for as a player in this league.
No, I give you that. I'm with that. I just feel like, you know, SI had him at 16, which is a little too high, in my opinion. I'll be honest, a little too high. But I still think, you know, just his value to the team. That's the thing about him. They don't have anybody that can do what Al Horford does, right? No. You talk about that depth, and I know you mentioned Aaron Baines. If Al Horford
the one position where they would be, I think, significantly hurt if he's not able to go. I think they've got every other position. And they were, you know, the goal in a perfect world was that you get a steal in Robert Williams, and he could potentially be a guy that you can rely on. But we're not using the word rely on and Robert Williams too often together.
Right, right. I'm going to let the young fella develop.
Give him some time.
Man, these lists, dude. DeMar DeRozan, 39? Come on, man.
That's a little low.
Gordon Hayward, 40?
Well,
I know he's coming off injury.
And I would hope that they explained that that was a factor in their decision to keep him that low. Because, I mean, if you're talking just pure talent, he's a top 30 player.
Right, yeah, for sure. Jalen, 37. Al, 34. We got Kyrie, 20. Tatum's a top 30 player, according to them. Here's my thing about Tatum, because I've been arguing with people over at the station here about Tatum. You know I'm a Tatum guy.
You're everybody's guy, man. Everybody's
not
a guy.
Not everybody. There's some players I'm not too high on. You know, we'll get to that in a different podcast. But I feel like we're anointing Tatum a little too soon.
We're anointing him for having the potential to be a great player.
Potential.
Because he is playing at a fairly high level as when the season began. I mean, what? He was what? Third, fourth option?
Yeah.
And he was a guy that was on the floor because of his defense, which is crazy because no one ever said a damn thing about him as a defender.
I know, right?
He was that dude. It was just like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah.
Tatum, I think the fact that he has been able to earn Brad's trust as a defensive player from the jump before his offensive game came around, I think it says a lot about him. And the dude shot off damn near 40% as a rookie from three-point range.
That is
special. There are guys who have been in the league for a decade and some change who are shooters who don't shoot that good.
Yeah. But they got him ahead of CJ McCollum even.
That's a tough one.
And I'm a CJ. I keep saying that. Everybody guy. Yeah. You're right. All right. But no, I mean, I just feel like we're heaping so much praise on Tatum, and I think he's going to be great. but let the dude develop. You know, let him let me see it, let it play out, dude.
What world do you live in?
Dude, I live in the reality, big fella.
The reality.
I live in reality.
Well, the reality is people don't want to wait. That's the reality. I'm just saying, it's real.
People don't want to wait. I would love
for him to develop. I think the Celtics would like to just see him gradually develop, but if he can go out and get you 20-6 now,
Do you think he'll do that with Gordon Hayward back? What's your prediction?
I think he's going to be more impactful earlier than the season than he will late because it's going to take Gordon some time to, I think, get his rhythm. And I'm gonna tell you right now, folks, sleep on Gordon Hayward if you want to. Take that nap. But I guarantee you, by the end of the day, it's going to be a dirt nap because he's going to bury you.
He's going to bury
people who think that he's not good. I don't think people understand how good this dude is.
No,
Gordon is nice.
They don't.
He is a really good player.
Michael Holland and I, though, did have an argument.
Well, he thought Isaiah Thomas was better than Kyrie Irving. So
yeah, Jimmy Butler or Gordon Hayward.
Jimmy Butler or Gordon Hayward? That's a tough
one.
This is what I'll say. Three words for you. I don't care. Because either one you give me,
okay,
I'm good.
That's a little bit of a cop-out, but I'm going to let you slide with that.
Let's keep it real. Who would say that Jimmy Butler is significantly better than Gordon Hayward? Because Jimmy's got a little more mileage on him.
So you got a little more mileage.
If they were both
I'd say Jimmy.
If they were the same age, I'd say Jimmy. But because Gordon's got less mileage on him, I think it.
Okay, all right.
I'm not so sure about that.
All right,
I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan.
I know you are, and a big Gordon Hayward fan too, right?
Yes, always happy.
Let's dive into your interview with Austin Ainge, Celtics Director of Player Personnel.
On the Celtics Talk podcast, we have Austin Ainge, Director of Player Personnel for the Boston Celtics. Austin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, glad you can make it. You know, it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk. You guys have been pretty active / aggressive, but very active in the summer. But it seemed this year it was a little bit more tempered. Was that by design or did it just kind of work out that way?
Well, pretty much shows you how we feel about our team. We really like this group, and we wanted to give them a chance. We think we've got a real chance this year and got a lot of talent.
And when you talk about this team, obviously, you know, people they hone in on Kyrie and Gordon and just the success that you guys were able to have in the postseason without two significant pieces to the puzzle. How do you see those guys kind of reintegrating themselves with this team?
I mean, those guys are so good and so talented. And I mean, Kyrie played the whole year.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not really Kyrie. Mm-hmm. It's Gordon. And Gordon is such a versatile all around player. He literally could fit with any team and any group. He doesn't really have many weaknesses. So he can fit in with any type of lineups or players.
Yeah, and when you talk about, you know, the guys that they're going to be, you know, playing more with this year, there's a different kind of confidence with that group this year. I mean, we didn't really know what Tatum could do. We didn't know if Rozier would make that leap. Jaylen Brown, those guys have the confidence of having the success that they had in the regular season and playoffs. Speak to what that means to this team going forward. When you've got so many of those young guys who, yes, they're still young, but they've got some experience and some confidence underneath them now.
Yeah, they've proven it at a high level, and they believe in themselves. And, you know, more importantly, they've proven it to their teammates, right? I think those guys always believed in themselves. They've got a high level of swagger, each one of those young guys. But I think that their teammates now know that they can do it, and their coaches know that they can do it, and the rest of the league knows. I think we all, know how to use them and I think that kind of all helps the group's confidence.
Yeah, and when you talk about confidence, because you've got so many young guys and veterans who are showing that, you guys have a really interesting roster, how you're constructed. You've got this young, up-and-coming, but still young group that's showing themselves that they can do. And then you've got these veterans like the Al Horfords, you know, the Baines, the Kyrie Irvings of the world. there has to be a certain balance with your roster, and you guys have seemed to do a really good job with that. How important has that been to this team's kind of gradual ascension to have that kind of roster balance, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the way it's worked out. We've had cap space, we've had high draft picks, and so we've just tried to do the best we can. I mean, really, that has to be the mix to make the salary cap work. I mean, mm-hmm. young guys on rookie contracts, you need some that can contribute along with your higher priced veterans. It's the only way to have as deep of a team as we have.
Right. And when you talk about the higher priced veterans, you're seeing more guys who may not necessarily be happy with their situation. We think back to Paul George, you know, last year, Jimmy Butler now, Kyrie Irving to some extent when he was in Cleveland. It seems that more of the elite players are kind of letting it be known where they want to play going forward. Is that a good thing for the NBA, for players to kind of have that impact?
I mean, I think it's always been there. It's, you know, maybe in the old days it wasn't as much move me. It was, hey, it's time to move these players or move right. this coach, right? We've seen right. that for decades.
Yes,
and
we
these,
have.
You know, these great players are huge parts of our league, and they have a lot of power because they really influence winning, and you know, it's hard to blame them for using the power that they have.
When you have a team like the Celtics did before you guys got Kyrie Irving, and then a player of that magnitude, that significance becomes available, what's the process in even contemplating trying to add a guy like that? I mean, do you immediately reach out to them, or do you do background checks on them? Or how does that whole process work when you already have a really, you know, solid team, but obviously you've got a potential opportunity to get someone who can take you to an even higher level?
Well, it's, you know, we're always doing background research mm-hmm. on all sorts of players, the best players to guys in Europe, to the G League, you know, so right. we're always trying to gather that information and be ready. Because mm-hmm. You never know what trade or signing is going to pop up. But, you know, we've always just been, you know, and most teams do this, we're always calling on all the best players. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember we've called on, you know, name the best players in the league when they've come up for free agency. We've called them or their, you know, their agents and said, hey, you know, any chance, even when we knew we had no chance, but you always check.
Even a Kobe Bryant.
You know, I don't ever remember calling specifically on Kobe,
right.
but I'm saying right. everybody, I mean, absolutely. We call on everybody.
And you guys have been good about just making sure, I would say the last few years, of being in position where if a player did become available and you wanted to make a strong run at them, you had the assets in terms of players, in terms of picks, that kind of stuff, to at least put forth a good offer. And there's a balancing act, and you've talked about this to some extent, where you need to be smart and real strategic about that, I would imagine. And what's the key to being successful along those lines? To being, you know, having that, it seems like you guys like the Midas touch of when to go after this particular guy and maybe not necessarily pursue that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we've got any secret sauce to it, Sherrod. It's more like we just, you know, try and the situation has to work for both sides. I mean, we were unsuccessful with Kevin Durant. We sure tried. We had lots of deals at different times that we really wanted to do that, you know, in hindsight, maybe it's better that we didn't do or some that we're glad that, you know, it didn't happen because we're in such a great situation now. So I, you know, there's always a lot of luck and timing and all of these things. And, you know, our main strategy is to just be aggressive, but to, you know, appropriately price things. It's just hard to, we always offer, what we feel like is a fair price. And if the other team doesn't want to do it or the player, it's not the right time for them, then it doesn't work out and you keep moving along.
Right. And one guy that certainly, I think at the end of the day, I think both you guys and he certainly, you know, felt good about the final deal being done, and that's Marcus Smart. What does he mean to this team going forward?
Everybody loves Marcus. I tell you what, you talk to our players and you ask them about Marcus and all of them say, no, we got to keep Marcus. Mm-hmm. And I know that isn't exactly, you know, the deepest level of basketball analytics, but that matters. That right. has to matter, right? If all of your best players say, I want this guy with me, that has to matter. And that's a big part of Marcus. His teammates love his heart, his energy. They feed off of it. And we're ecstatic to have him back. I have to say our hearts are all just out to him with the passing of his mother. And mm-hmm. we're hoping that we can be there for him for the next little while as he gets through this.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to touch on next was just, you guys have dealt with, unfortunately, this before in recent years with players losing loved ones. As an organization, as a franchise, what's the role that you have to play when these type of situations arise?
I mean, there's a lot of basketball as a business talk out there, and there are business aspects, but we are really close. I mean, we spend so much time with each other, often more than our own families. Mm-hmm. We spend time with these people we work with, and we get really close, and we just try to be friends and offer any help that we can. I mean, as you know, the grieving process is tough and mm-hmm. unique for everyone. And some people want to talk a lot. Some people want to talk a little, and you just have to be there for people. And whatever Marcus needs, we're there for him. And hopefully for a lot of people, luckily, basketball is kind of an oasis in the storm. You know, it's a safe haven, because it's hard to think about the problems in life when you're out on the court. So a lot of times, you know, guys can use that as a refuge and that's hopefully that's what it'll be for Marcus.
Yeah, because I know when Isaiah Thomas lost his sister a couple years ago, I know basketball, it did become that place of refuge for him. And hopefully Marcus, you know, he'll find wherever that place of solace and comfort is, whether it's basketball court or elsewhere, certainly. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family as well. Austin, I wanted to talk to you also about the 2019 draft, not in specific players, but the fact that we're not going to do that today.
All right.
I don't want to talk to you about players. I want to talk about the fact that the Celtics can be major players in that draft. I mean, you guys could you could own that first round outside of the number one pick overall, but still, what's that process like when you know that you could potentially have, you know, a significant number of guys in the top 15 in a draft? I mean, do you lock in on those guys a little bit more than maybe you would if you're picking in the late to mid 20s, or how do you approach those type of drafts?
Yeah, I mean, we have the potential for 4 first round picks.
Yeah, which is insane.
I don't think we'll get them. I think I think we'll have 2, maybe 3. Mm-hmm. I think 4 is pretty unlikely. I don't want to disparage other teams, you know, talking about their records, but right. you know, the protections on those matter. So yeah. we'll see. But yeah, we could, I mean, potentially have what I think the best case scenario we could have this year is the second pick, the ninth pick,
15,
and you know, what,
and yours.
Yeah, and ours. So that would be, you know, that would be awesome. I'd love that problem. it's a lot of work. You know, I was joking that this season felt like vacation almost with one first round pick and no max cap space. We've had such crazy summers the last 2 years. You know, it is a lot of work, but it really is fun. Looking at our team and looking at the guys in the draft and trying to imagine how they would fit and looking at all the talent, there's, you know, every year there's just another crop of good young players coming up, and this year's no different.
Yeah, you talk about the vacation, like with only one pick. Well, I hate to break the news to you, but insanity will return next summer for you guys. When you look at your roster and all the guys who are going to be free agents, are most likely going to be free agents. I mean, it's going to be very different, obviously. And I'm just curious, when you have a roster like this, with the kind of talent that you have assembled right this moment, knowing that, you know, a lot of those guys are going to have some decisions to make next summer. Is there a greater sense of urgency as an organization when you know that there's the potential that this group could look significantly different a year from now?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, this season's so long. I think our guys, with all of our players, we just try to tell them to get better every day and focus on the moment, and the results will take care of themselves. I know that's a cliche, but we really do try to do it that way. But from a front office side, we are always preparing. We know our guys who's going to be free agents, you know, this year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, how many picks we have coming up, and we try to, you know, plan it out the best you can and have options and replacements and preparations for every scenario in case you can't keep this player or that player. And so, yeah, we always are prepared. That's the job. Just like, you know, all of our fans at home with their fantasy teams, you're always got to be ready, right?
There you go. You're talking my language now, Austin. There you go. Hey, the one thing I wanted to also catch up on you as we kind of close this thing out here was Jack McMullen did an amazing series for ESPN looking at just mental health. And there were a number of Celtics that were, you know, prominently mentioned in her piece. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just, you know, just get your take on just the importance of mental health to this organization, which clearly when you read that piece and just in conversations with Brad and Danny and yourself, it seems like that really has become a priority for this organization to really examine that issue and be there for your players in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, we try to, we've got signs up and we do presentations on things that, you know, it's take care of your body, get your sleep, eat right, limit your, you know, intake of bad substances, and take care of your mind and take care of your game, you know, just everything to make your healthy, well-rounded person and player. I mean, it's really just a simple logical step that, hey, the mind is obviously a huge part of all this.
So, right.
And Brad's been huge with this, and we've got some great consultants that are available to our players, where we just try to make everybody available all the services that they could possibly need, and that they don't have to try too hard to find these resources if they need them.
Right. Absolutely. And that healthy mind, healthy body, healthy season. Everyone is happy. As Gordon Hayward would say, daddy's always happy when all that stuff goes down, for sure.
You should see our new kitchen set up, Sirat. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are getting full chef-made meals three times a day now from our amazing kitchen staff, and it's just another part of it, man, that has changed so much over the last 20 years. It's really cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you, Austin Ainge, are awesome. Thank you so much for being on the Celtics Talk podcast, and we will talk again soon, my friend. Thank you so much.
It was fun. See ya.
I'll talk to you soon.
Good stuff right there from Austin Ainge. He's getting ready for the season. We're getting ready for the season. Media Day is Monday, dude.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. Bart
can't
Scott.
Wait.
Can't wait. And make sure you stay with us all next week. You know, we're going to have exclusive interviews getting you ready for the season here on the Celtics Talk podcast and NBCSportsBoston.com. The first preseason game a week from Friday. My man Sherrod will be down there. I'll be holding it down
Carolina, back here. I'm coming back.
It'll be our first chance seeing Gordon Hayward back in uniform.
Can't wait.
It'll be interesting to see how much Brad uses him early on and see what kind of condition he's in. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Make sure you subscribe on all your favorite podcasting apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you want to do. Leave a review and a rating. We'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.
We are out!